Pour something flammable into your glass. It's JD Gamercast. My name is Lyon. With me, as always, is Nathan. Joining us today is Josh. He was the proprietor of the Firestorm Armada Schomburg Offensive event that we played in at Adepticon. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you, guys.
Josh is a listener of the show, so he will understand all the jokes, and he will be right there with us the whole way through, which should be very exciting. But like I said, welcome. I think Nathan and I both enjoyed ourselves. It was very clear that you guys feared the Canadians. I think that's fair because we still did pretty good. So
no, you guys actually did pretty good. Yeah.
It was a good time. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And as I said last week, if you use our very, very specific measure of sweep, I mean, we swept the whole thing.
We swept the shit talk.
I mean, that's really what it is.
Right. You can't say like top three, but that isn't even like what we said. I mean, you might remember or have us on record saying something like that, but that wasn't what we were saying, right?
I mean, it's all about rules as intended, like shit talk as intended, not as written.
Pretty much it, right?
We're not going raw on this. We're not going raw on this at all. Okay.
No, we always go raw. All right, so let's get this party started. We're going to just have a typical show. We're going to be talking about the Firestorm event as we get to the end there, but let's start this off with what we're drinking. I'm drinking Jack and Juice.
No.
What are you drinking, Nathan?
Bacon maple ale, because Adepticon's done. My liver can take a break. So I'm going back to some beer, give it a week to just recuperate. I have been drinking all day as well today. My coworkers and I ditched work an hour early and went to a bar. And then I was drinking at D&D, so I'm already kind of lit.
That's good. That's exciting. What about you, Josh? What are you drinking?
I'm finishing off the other bottle of Founders Dragon's Milk that I had from the convention that I did not get to finish. So.
The fuck is that?
It is a bourbon barrel aged stout made here in Michigan. It's quite delicious.
See, I was going to say the milk of a dragon. Didn't you fucking listen? Like,
I mean, if the milk of a dragon is bourbon, that says so much about the movie Reign of Fire. Right? I mean, need I say more? All right. So, let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. I'll start us off here. I've been building War Machine models. As we talked about, we had that big ass swag bag from Adepticon, which had all sorts of crazy shit in it. And I've been talking about starting War Machine for a while now. Oddly enough, it's the same army that Nathan has also got. So,
hey, in fairness, I have two. So, you know, I can play Signar when you play Convergence.
Right, Clockety Clockwork is what I'm playing, and those models were an absolute pain in the ass to clean, but very easy to put together. Because apparently that's how the War Machine plastics go, where, like, the arm sockets are, like, basically Tetris pieces, so you can never put the wrong arm in the wrong socket.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of their older stuff is, I know that they have leveled up their plastics in the last 6 months or so, so anything new coming out is very comparable to Games Workshop in terms of quality and how it goes together, only because Games Workshop seems to be proving a point, they will put, your War Machine models will get put together in 100 fewer pieces.
Excellent. So, outside of that, I've been kind of recomposing all of my Planetfall stuff. I'm going to start painting that hopefully in the next week here, because I'm going to try to get some games in. And I do have a plan to play some more Firestorm this weekend. It's going to be good. It's going to be a good time. What about you, Josh?
I'd say I haven't touched the Troll Blood box that came with my swag bag, but I've been,
I don't think anybody who got a Troll Blood box touched it.
Yeah, I got trolls, and when I went to try to trade them at the, like, pawn shop vendor that was there, he's like, I don't want them. Like, this is how many troll boxes the dude had, because I was like, can I just trade this for a faction I play? And he's like, no.
No, I have 40 of these, is what he said.
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty much what that came down to. There you go. What about you, Nathan?
Been starting to paint Ralphosa. Like I said, I'm trying to take the Space Spiders to Onslaught here in a few weeks. Also nail down my Planetfall scheme so that way I can go whole ham on my core helixes in giddy anticipation for my giant Robo Scorpion, which I can't fucking wait for.
Which, as we were informed, is still an arachnid.
Sure.
There you go. Somebody who knows their spiders.
Listen, in that moment, like, the fact that the comment was literally nothing but, hey, assholes, scorpions are arachnids. And I was like, I love my fans, because this is literally speaking to me in the language I speak to them with.
No offense taken whatsoever. It was okay. That was the only way you could teach me. If you didn't open with an insult, how am I going to retain that information?
Right?
Right, exactly.
So yeah, listen, I've got my 8 Nidus base colored, and I'm starting to put the detailing on them. I'm going to try to batch paint them and then move to the Widows and Escorts, because once I get all the little shit done, I'm more than halfway.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right, so let's move on to the weekly listener poll. The question that we have for you guys is, what things do you look for when starting a new game? And 55% of the vote said awesome models, 40% of the vote said interesting game mechanics, and only one person said low prices. What the fuck? Only one person cares about prices. We bitch so much. Everyone bitches so much about prices, and only one person's like, all I care about is how much it costs.
All I'm saying is this highly scientific poll has proved that Games Workshop's business model of fuck you, you'll pay it anyway, apparently works.
Well, like, we all know it works, though. We're keenly aware of the fact that it works. That's the big thing, right? Josh, what was your view on this one?
I know I usually chose models first, and that's why I kind of accidentally bought some Infinity stuff when I was at Adepticon this weekend.
I think everybody accidentally buys Infinity. I think that's the only way anybody ever gets into it.
The way the female Infinity models accidentally forget all their clothes back at the barracks.
Mm-hmm.
Even the fully armored ones, I noticed. Like, oh, those are some nice non-combat ready gaps in your armor. That's awesome.
There you go. All right, so we did have a couple comments here. And by a couple, I mean one. And the person commented on the poll instead of on the website. Boo, VC Neil. He said, I voted for game mechanics. Sure, awesome models are a draw, and which is why it's top ranked right now. Sure. But I come from a gameplay angle always. There is game system worth its models if the mechanics do not interest me, or the factions playing are not fleshed out with unique rules, specials, etc. Talking about the elephant in the room, Games Workshop has what it has today because it makes the best models, has a great IP, and the rules are great for the most part. To players, it boils down to, do you play Call of Duty, or do you play Mass Effect or Final Fantasy? And I mean, like, I understand that to a certain point. I think, yeah, preference, kind of that modeling preference is always going to draw people in. There's games where people will tell you, like, oh, man, the game is so great, the rules are so balanced, and you look at the models, and you're like, oh, Malifaux, oh, fuck that.
Well, but, and that's exactly it, is, like, models are the reason why, despite the fact that there are so many people where we're from that are into Malifaux, that are into War Machine, we have never taken that plunge. Or not never, because, like, obviously we're both starting to dip our toes in the War Machine waters, but it took their models getting good.
Yes, and that's really it.
You know, because...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I've heard from a lot of people that since War Machine did, you know, release their Mark II rules, that the game is fucking brilliant. And I've played it a couple times, and I am a fan of their game mechanics. I think it plays great, but... Again, if you can't get models that interest me enough to paint, although War Machine doesn't need you to paint, I have standards, then I'm not going to get attracted to the game. I'm not going to want to give you my money if the models are shit.
Yeah. We did have a comment on the actual podcast post where it was G.
Mm-hmm.
One letter. He says, I hope people enjoy Relic Knights, but how Soda Pop and Ninja Division kept information from backers, lied, and had a year-long delay in shipping, I'd rather give GW money than Soda Pop. Plus, their post-Kickstarter price points are fucking silly. One faceless porn star on a tiny mech is the same price as mid-sized GW tanks. Their normal characters aren't as crazy priced as the new clam-packed GW characters, but they're also not nearly as detailed. Don't be fooled by a great paint job. See, this is kind of one of the things that I wanted to feedback into the poll here. The reason why I don't vote models, I vote interesting game mechanics. Like, yeah, the models can kill it, and that's for sure. But even if a game has great models, I may not even play it if it's just like... And like, Wild West Exodus is one of those things where, like, I wasn't impressed by the demo game, but, God, the models were so cool, and the theme was really cool, and they were great people who ran the games. You know, Sean, don't apologize for that intro game. That was not your fault. As Nathan pointed out, it's our fault. because of the people that we are. But in general, like, you know, that game, the models might bring you back, right? But to me, I'm just not impressed with models anymore. Like, we're so saturated right now. It's like being like, well, what do you pick in a car? Do you pick a car solely because of the way it looks? Right? Like, there's so many cars out there. There's so many gorgeous cars out there in the world. You know, piles and piles and piles of them, to the point where it's just like, yeah, but I could go to, I could put 12 games up on a shelf and say, yeah, 8 of them have great models. Everybody, like, that's part of what's expected at this point. You don't make ugly cars.
Yeah.
Unless you're like Nissan. All right. So basically, yeah, I think that's where I stand on that one. So yay, thanks to everyone who voted on the weekly listener poll. You can find those at jadagamercast.com. We will have another question for you at the end of the show, of course, if you remember. So, let's move on to the model of the week. The models of the week. We're going to break this one down a couple of different ways here. We have, Adeptus Mechanicus on the horizon, and oh my god, is it just fucking awful looking. Everything is stupid. I hate everything. The concepts for the Dragoons and the Ballistosaurus. I know, it's not how you're supposed to say it, but I read it that way the first time, and I was like, Ballistosaurus, hell yes.
The first time I saw it, I was like, balls what? Oh, there's an I there.
Yeah, it's the Ballistarius, but it's a Ballistosaurus, as far as I'm concerned.
It may as
it looks
well
like
be
a T-Rex.
Well, yeah, as I said to you, I was like, what if someone decided they were going to make a T-Rex, like a T-Rex into a robot, but they had never seen a T-Rex before. And someone was just like, great big long legs, tiny, tiny arms, you know, it's got a head. Oh, yeah, and it needs a tail, too. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like I said, and that's really kind of where this goes for me. So, unlike you, I mean, I really like the Skitarii. For some reason, they totally do it for me. It's probably the exact same reason I love Iron Hands. Lob off limbs, give me cybernetics, fucking love it to death. With that being said, I think that this striding thing, it does nothing for me. I think the pose is not great. It looks long and awkward. When you look at their web bundle of 3, it doesn't look like you have any options whatsoever on the width of that pose. Mm-hmm. No matter what, they're going to be striding from one end to the other end of that oval base. So there isn't a lot of variety in there. You know, I think that of the two, the Dragoon looks less silly than Johnny Turd. And I'm not saying he doesn't look silly. I'm just saying less silly, because it's like, I got a lance with a tuning fork on the end.
Sure.
Ting!
So fucking stupid.
Oh my god, our battle group is not in tune.
Okay, so here is where all of this fails for me. Okay? Everything from the Mechanicum in the 41st millennium that we've seen up until this point is form and function, and, you know, like, nothing is built for design. It's always built for form and function. We have the, you know, standard templates. We have, you know, rhinos, razorbacks, we've got land raiders, we have all this kind of stuff. And then we see the sisters, and they go church it all up, and we're like, okay, but that's sisters, they're going to church it. You can put that on a T-shirt, right? But basically, yeah, sisters of battle, church it up.
Oh my god, I think I've got to do the fucking safe word write-in of churching it up.
Churching it up. I play bass for churching it up. But no, like, and when you look at the Mechanicus models as they've put them out here, the problem that I have with it is that they are not doing a good job of making them match what we're supposed to know of the Mechanicum up until this point, right?
Well, like, and for me, the crazy thing about the Striders is when you look at the side view, because one of the comments that I was going to make was that, why are there no servitors here? You know, like, yes, I get that Skitarii are warriors that have mech'd themselves up, you know, and you're totally right about the form and function. And even when I was thinking about these fucking rider things, the Dragoons or the Ballistosaurus, right? You know, my first thought was, if the riders weren't there, it would be a better model. And only when I swung it into the side do you notice that there's absolutely a servitor just hardwired in his legs.
Oh, no, I saw that first. Yeah.
See, I didn't, because when you look at it straight on, all you get is like this weird gun thing. And I'm just like, without the rider, that is suddenly an Adeptus Mechanicus style of design, where it's just like, look, we got the long legs because it can go over boulders and shit like that, so great, whatever. And we've just wired it into a servitor, and we have a controller elsewhere, or they have battle wetware, you know? When you read a Mechanicus for, you know, in the Horse Heresy, they had fucking combat wetware for servitors, and suddenly 10,000 years later, they just forgot how to program it. Like, it's been flashing 12 ever fucking since the Heresy, and everyone's just like, I don't know how to set the time. Do you know how to set the time? Like, is this what Mars has been reduced to, that we have to have this guy riding on the back of it? So,
well,
there are, like I said, up until I saw the dude, I was like, I hate everything. Then I see the dude, I'm like, I really like that. I don't like anything else.
Sorry, say that again, because I just had some crap.
And apparently everyone is drinking.
What?
Oh, okay. I was just saying that the only part of this that I really like is the fact that the dude is wired in as the servitor, you know, fucking legs chopped off at the knee, hands chopped off, fit in. I love that element of it, but the rider truly ruins it. And whether that's the rider with the big retarded gun that by the looks of it is longer than the body is.
What, you don't like the leftover discount Harlequin jackets? Fucking, it's just...
Listen, they shop at the same Army Surplus store, okay? The deals are fucking crazy.
Like, okay, the Walkers, the Ballistosaurus, okay, I get it, sure, fine, why not? Probably
this is the one that I'm like, this is dumb. I would rather see things that you see.
The Dragoon, the Ballistosaurus, interchangeable. I don't give a shit. They're both...
No. I'm not even saying that the Dragoon is good. I'm just saying that as a concept, I would rather have something phenomenal like a Thalix.
Right.
Than this weird robo-pooch.
Right. Okay. So then we move on to, like, the Skitarii Rangers, right? Now, the Skitarii themselves, I guess I'm okay with them, just in the sense that, like, they aren't using muskets. But the
those aren't muskets, but they, you can literally play, those aren't muskets, every time you shoot, it'd be great.
For like the 8% of the internet who gets that reference. Right. So, but yeah, like, these guys just look fucking ridiculous. I absolutely cannot stand the weapons. I think they look so old and stupid that there's not a single, like, redeeming feature here. They completely fall off for me. The big, gigantic cod pieces, like the layered, segmented cod pieces, like, shit does not work for me at all. The actual Skitarii, the Vanguard, at least their kind of last guns are these last guns or auto guns? They look like they might be auto guns. Let me get this zoomed in. Just because of the magazine, the way the magazine looks. But they're probably last guns because they got coils. All right,
with radium carbines.
Radium carbines, got it. These guys are a little bit better.
Rangers use galvanic rifles. Did you just take like a D&D equipment list and just add sci-fi words in front of it? Like, how are we getting with this?
Maybe? Jesus. I don't know. What do you think about the Adeptus Mechanicus, Josh?
Well, it's... I kind of share the opinion on the Walkers. It looked like a big freaking like robot chicken thing with a big melt gun.
Which you would think would be cool, because we all love robot chicken.
Yeah,
right?
No, but it's... GW keeps designing all this stuff that, you know, is attempting to draw me back in to play 40K again, but it's just not happening. Like, I like the Skitarii, but the Walkers were just kind of looked awkward and weird and nowhere near as good as, like, the Mechanicum stuff that, like, Forge World's been producing.
Well, and I think that's kind of the final point, is that if we're going to compare the two, Forge World's been knocking it out of the park, making some really cool-looking models. Right, and it's like when you compare the two and you break them down, it just makes you wonder, like, but why didn't you just take that great idea, you know? I mean, and
yeah,
but Games Workshop's been making this mistake for how long? Right,
right. Like,
how many years have they just continued to make the same fucking mistake when it comes to the goddamn like choices that they're making for these models? I'm trying to bring it up here because I actually want to get a.
Oh, God, I mean, you can go through, I'll send the link out over Skype, because I've been looking at them. But like I said, you can click into any one of those sections, you know, because it's sorted by Force Org, and all you get is just these fucking amazing ideas, whether they're fucking the Automata, the Thalax, Myrmidons, like, it's just like, everything has that form, you know, that function over form. You know, it's either a mini Titan in the case of, like, Battle Automata and things like that, where it's clear that they're just like, no, we're just building a fucking battle robot. It's going to look like all of our battle robots. Or it's phenomenal. I think it's the Myrmidons. I think the Myrmidons kill it for Mechanicum, because when you look at them, they're in heavy support and elite. They're basically just, like, human forms that are so augmented, and there's so little actual human left that they're just these gun batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, that's the Mechanicum we know and love. So while I appreciate the Skatari and I love it, because even when you look at him, you can look at him, it's just like, okay, he's got no legs, they're cybernetic implants, this guy's arms are gone, they've all got like the Skatari faceplates. The aesthetic really works for me. Why they're all wearing commissar overcoats instead of wearing robes, maybe the sculptor just can't make robes. Like, whoever is sculpting the Mechanicum at Games Workshop just failed robe class. And that's why everyone's in that Harlequin fucking commissar jacket look. But at least the Skatari work. When you look at those Iron Striders, that's the one where it's just like, this doesn't fit any of the previous aesthetics. Like,
right.
This is a because we can. And can we also talk about how each kit is $59 for one single 80-piece model? Like, there's a reason I made my joke earlier about 100 fewer pieces. Like, Games Workshop is in the because we can phase. No one's told them they shouldn't yet.
Well, can we talk about the fucking transfer sheet?
$24 of decals, baby. Mm-hmm.
I just, like, to...
This is like, this is 210 millimeters by 297 millimeters of highly detailed transfers depicting the iconography and symbolism of the Adeptus Mechanicus for $24 each.
I
remember when these were like four, but actually I remember when you'd be like, does anyone have Space Marine transfer sheets? And, you know, everyone at Vets Nights would be like, yeah, I got like 30.
Yeah, I've got about 45 transfer sheets.
How many do you need?
To go.
And they just give them to you. But even if you wanted to bits order them, they're like $4.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, well, here we are. Holy
$4.
Shit.
Hey, why the fuck not, right? So there you have it. That is the Adeptus Mechanicus. Man, am I ever looking forward to reviewing those three things. All right,
well,
so...
It seems like it's going to be a new army launch. I mean, Games Workshop's doing the bullshit. I will guarantee that the Adeptus Mechanicus Codex will come out at the very tail end, because this week's White Dwarf has all the rules you need for your Skatari and Iron Strider, so make sure you buy the White Dwarf, everybody. It's really the only way they can get people to buy White Dwarf. Is just be like, we're going to put rules in for models you want to play.
Here, give them a try. Yeah, that's pretty much what that comes down to. All right, so let's get on to the main topic of today's show. We are going to talk about the Schomburg Offensive, the Firestorm Armada event that Nathan and I played in, that Josh ran. So I want to start this off by just getting kind of a quick overview of your experience, Josh. How you felt the event went, some of the feedback that you may have received and stuff like that. And then we will tear that apart, like pick it apart and pitch about the things that we didn't like.
As expected.
I mean, you know what's on brand.
You knew what was coming.
As is tradition.
Exactly.
Well, everything went pretty smooth, like from our end. Other than some just time delay due to late players and trying to make sure pairings were right. Everything went smooth on our end. You know, there were very few hiccups. We only had 26 people sign up. We had two no-shows, and then we had two drops partway through the tournament. Only one of them was, like, D.Va-related. Dice Diva related, as we call it.
Mm-hmm.
But
now, was it the same player that had a hissy fit when I was playing game two and I'm like, or game three, and I'm like, the fuck is going on over there?
I do believe that would be the same player, yes.
Excellent. Got it. No big surprises there.
No, not at all. But everything went smooth. You know, we were real happy with the way everything played out. I know, you know, there are some There were a couple hiccups, but all in all, it was like real minor stuff that can
that's,
be.
That's made. Very typical tournament type shit. Like that happens every tournament. Anyone I've run, anyone Nathan has run, like you're always dealing with those people. We always go back to an experience that we had at one of the very early onslaughts where there was a guy just losing his shit over his opponent, kind of casually, jokingly flipping off his models. Keep in mind that this was a guy drinking in front of his child who was just sitting there watching the gameplay. So it was this very awkward moment. But he's like screaming for the tournament organizer. So we've just decided that it was just the I need a parent scream. Somebody get me an adult. Ward, I need an adult.
Well, it's like I usually have, I say I like running tournaments better than playing in them because I had the, or have the nickname of being, I'm just the 40K diva when I was still doing 40K because I'd lose my shit on like the smallest thing, smallest slight. So I'm like, you know what? It's better if I just run events because then I don't have to play in them and look like
because then you always win.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same reason I ref roller derby. I can never lose.
Same reason I edit the podcast.
no, but I mean, first of all, from our perspective, I want to say job well done. Because, I mean, other than running late, which I think almost every event that has ever been run involving gamers, especially lots of them, will always run late. So, I mean, for me, it's pretty much expected. But, I mean, otherwise, It was fucking great. I mean, I played 4 great games. Yes, one of them was my Kryptonite. Who cares? He won fucking best sport. I gave him a 5, despite literally being my Kryptonite. Mm. You know, like I said, great games, great opponents. You know, I got to meet new people. I didn't have to play my best friend. How was that game, Link?
Maddie and I had a good time. It was just that, like, if I hadn't played Maddie, which was, like, the fleet that he and I had constructed to beat my fleet, he would not have killed my dreadnought. But yeah, no, it was one of those things where, like, you know, Maddie and I play each other all the time, so it was kind of a shitty matchup to get, but, like, we were like, ah, whatever, it's the second game. It's not like it's this big throwaway, but it was by the time that you and I had hit the third game, where we were back in our room saying, like, okay, if Nathan matches up against Maddie, or if I get matched up against you or John, like, I'm just going to be like, no, this can't happen. Like, we didn't fly all the way from Canada to, like, play all of our friends. And that also ruined our sweep chances, which I felt was just constructed on your guys' part. It's part of the conspiracy that I'm currently putting stock into.
Conspiracy theory?
I mean, clearly. Yeah.
We are absolutely, absolutely doing it. So, I mean, one thing I want to ask you, Lang, is because, I mean, like, for us in our region, we do not play with that much terrain on the boards.
No.
Ever. I think that most tournaments are still woefully unprepared for Firestorm. They end up giving us one planet in the center and one something in each of the table quarters. Not nearly enough terrain. I think when you and I play at your house, it's about 60% of what was on those tables, right? So, I mean,
well, generally, I think the big difference is that we tend to use less pieces, but they're almost always larger, right?
Yeah.
Like, what we saw with what you guys had on the table for train, and this were some of the comments that have been posted to Admirals League that I had gotten personally from people, was that, like, the meta that you guys were playing in with the amount of terrain and, like, the like, even distribution of it across the table essentially made certain armies very, very hard to play, like very out of the meta for what you guys were doing. Whereas where we do play with larger pieces. Like on my table, I probably also have about 20% of the table covered, but that's because my planet is like, you know, 8 inches across, and I've got an asteroid
Ladies.
Belt that's like 10 or 12 inches across, and I've got a space station that's,
Ladies.
You know, right? So they tend to be much larger pieces on the table as opposed to a lot smaller pieces kind of scattered about, right? Like one of the things that you had mentioned, Nathan, was like you almost couldn't complete a move without hitting some piece of terrain, without some debris field or some nebula.
Yeah, you know, especially with larger squadrons. Because that was actually a question that I had, which is why I was actually hoping that the total tournament results would have been posted beforehand, Josh. But I do have a question for you. Like, what was the highest placed Dendrenzi player? Because my first thought was like, oh my god, this is going to be so much fun. My second thought was, thank fucking god I didn't bring Dendrenzi like I was thinking. Because, dear lord, those tables fuck them.
There's absolutely no opportunity to play a long game with the way that the tables were set up. I mean, like a long range game.
It, terrain seems to be like the number one comments I've been getting to, honestly, mm-hmm. on it. And we, you know, it's just like we have always done, you know, gone kind of by book, but we were basing it off of like our 40K experience and stuff for like mm-hmm. terrain coverage. Mm-hmm. And George actually is a Dendrenzi player, and he's been like he's used to playing on that much terrain. Like when we've played in tournaments that had less terrain than what we usually use,
mm-hmm.
and I know George just has a freaking field day because we're so used to the way we do terrain, which is, you know, what we're used to is what we had at the time.
Yeah.
But it's just like he's like how do people like not just get utterly dominated by Dendrenzi when they're, you know, when they have less coverage than this and they're used, you know,
easily, quite easily.
But terrain, you know, we may address, you know, terrain.
No. Again, listen, I want you to know for right now, like, I have no problems with the amount of terrain on those boards.
Yeah, correct. I feel the same way.
You know, I think it was great. I think it adds an element to the game that is, again, very different from how we play locally. It's just that I did not expect that. Because, like, even when you look at, you know, a lot of the top armies, they're armies that either need to get into range band one at full strength, like the cash, where they're going to fucking maul you if that's the case, or Tarakians, where it's just like, who fucking cares about terrain? I'm in direct weapons all day long. So it's just like, you know, it obviously favors certain fleet builds over others. And that's why I think maybe there are some people complaining about that terrain, is if they're expecting bigger more open boards, they feel cheated. But I mean, for me personally, I have no problem with it. For me, I saw those boards and I was like, I am so excited to play on boards like this. Yeah. We never have anything like that.
Oh, it was a new thing, yeah. We
you
definitely
know, it was totally new. But like I said, it's
came out of it
just,
enjoying it. Except for Maddie.
Wait,
he played Arsene.
When I got paired up against my Dendrenzi player for the last game, you know, I knew at deployment, despite the fact that this was a long deployment edge because of the amount of terrain and because I play Terrans, where it's just like, I play Terrans, I can ablate Dendrenzi in optimal range bands on an open day. And so when I'm getting nothing but obscured and sometimes even blocked on his big shit, I knew he couldn't win. There was just absolutely no opportunity for him to win that game because
outside of hot dice, right?
Yeah, outside of just retardedly hot dice. But, you know, and that's why I was just like, you know, I was curious. Was there a Dendrenzi player that would prove, no, you can win, you just have to play smart? Or did all of them finish bottom 50%? So, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I'll have to actually look at the numbers because George was still getting everything kind of collated.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the things that, you know, in the events that, like, the Firestorm events that I ran and, you know, a couple other things I kind of heard from people coming back, what Nathan and I talked to each other about as well, is one of the things you always kind of got to think of when you're building a scenario is, who am I fucking with this? Right? Because any scenario you build is going to fuck somebody. Because you listen to the show, Nathan and I are stalwart supporters of using rulebook scenarios because we don't feel like, you know, slightly rewriting a scenario to make it slightly different than what people would normally play doesn't necessarily make the game better or more fun.
Yeah.
And at the same point, when you're saying like, okay, who am I fucking by doing this? You also say like, okay, who am I boosting by doing this? Like, who am I catapulting into, like, this is the perfect scenario for these guys? Not to say that that's what you guys were doing, but what you have to do is you have to mitigate that with variety.
Yeah.
And between all four scenarios, there was not enough variety in the scenery. And that's what I felt. I loved playing with the scenery. I actually really enjoyed a fucking torpedo fleet. I didn't give a shit. but it was one of those things where, like, you know, I could see going in against a lot of players where it was just like, they're sitting there going like, I can't do anything for the first three turns. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my last game against the Directorate, with William, which is fantastic, you know, he couldn't do anything for the first two turns. He just couldn't do shit. I flew my Corvettes at him, and that was the only way that he could get in there and do stuff. And then he killed them all and used the broken scenario primary objective in order to, you know, do fairly well.
But he's not bitter meta, at all. He's
because real, your like, meta says, fuck full unit sizes, bring them in. All right, so...
Well, yeah,
because,
I mean, you know...
Let me coalesce this point here.
Okay.
I'm going to pull back. I'm going to pull back a little bit here. There's, like, three or four types of fleets that we see, right? And, like, each type of fleet, you can almost build a scenario for them or build a scenario against them. And in this case, it like we kept saying it last episode as well, you guys built these according to your meta. And in your meta, they worked, right? Yeah. Because that's what you guys play. That's how it works. It totally works out. For our meta, for other people, absolutely didn't work. There were people who just were screaming over the amount of terrain. So keep that in mind maybe for next time. And also don't cheat and allow things like voluntary compression. No, I'm just kidding. I thought voluntary compression was
I love voluntary decompression.
It totally worked for me. Decompression.
But again, voluntary decompression, I can see if you are playing a whole ham boarding action fleet, whether that's you're building your Ralphosa or your Directorate or even your Ceruleans to be 100% boarding, or God forbid you play Pathogen where that is your trick, right? You know,
yeah.
I got one trick and it's boarding actions. I can see how voluntary decompression can be really frustrating because losing that D6 minus, what is it, two?
Minus two. Yeah. So it only works 2/3 of the time.
Listen, I totally get it, but it's just like losing those 4 AP before you roll in exchange for, let's be honest, no downside whatsoever because I don't give a shit about hazard markers. You don't give a shit about hazard markers. Like, the only time you're worried about taking those hazard markers is when you're like, I only got one crew point left. Shit, like this could be bad. You know, but it's just like losing those potential 4 AP is losing you a boarding action. And since boarding actions are once per game, sorry? Is it hits?
It's hits.
Oh, it just seemed fucking worse. But like I said, losing those hits when boarding actions are a once per game thing, again, caveat being obviously Second Assault, Mar, and Pathogen, that can be really devastating to the way that you do play a fleet. But again, just be open and honest and say, hey guys, we're running voluntary decompression because the rule is cool as fuck. Because I remember reading the rule book for the first time and I was like, this is the best goddamn rule in the world. I love voluntary decompression because it's so goddamn fluffy. We watched Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
When the fire was raging, Saul Tai is just like, fucking seal it off and vent it. I got people in there. I don't fucking care. We're going to lose the ship if you don't.
Your new ships are going to explode, yeah.
Right? So it's just like, I love the idea behind it. It's super fluffy, and I just think that from a tournament organizer perspective, if you're going to end up using any of those voluntary rules, you just be open and honest with it, right? Well, voluntary decompression will be used. You know, custom scenarios. I thought your primer scenarios were great. You know, in fact, because like I know that Lang was a little unhappy. Like for me, the only scenario that made me go, you know, I really wish this was playtested a little more was the last one. Because in Lang's scenario, your opponent had one single ship left.
Yeah.
You had almost your entire MFV.
Oh, he had killed 9 Corvettes, 15 points apiece. He had 10 models in his fleet.
Yeah, so it's just like, ship left. You know, he had one ship left. You can't get your primary objective, despite the fact that this is one of the most one-sided ass-kickings you've given out all day.
Mm-hmm.
For me, my Terrans were in the exact same boat where, you know, I was paired against the Dendrenzi player with probably the best 900-point Dendrenzi fleet you can build, in my opinion, the 9 cruisers battleship with frigates. And it's just like, it's a fucking great list. But when we finished our game at the end of turn 6 on time, he had his battleship left, one frigate left, and I had destroyed one ship more than him because all he did was kill my 8 missionaries and my 2 escorts. And then a corrosive marker took out my shield cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, he himself had destroyed nothing but my tier 3s, and it still took me to the bottom of turn 6 in order to pull it out just by virtue of the fact that I chose to build my fleet in such a way that you took multiple tier 3 models. So like I said, it was my only one where I was like, even if all you'd done was swap the primary and secondary, where you said primary is wipeout squadrons, secondary is individual models, suddenly it's balanced in such a way that you're not punishing people for taking tier 3. Because, like, if our friend Scott had shown up, he plays a Cerulean fleet with 3 squadrons of 5 Pack Hunter Cerulean frigates.
Yeah, like, Austin plays a list like that, too.
Yeah, they'd easily do the heavy lifting, but one bad matchup where I get a lucky nuclear roll, and now even if he's fucking hammering me, I can't lose.
All right, so Josh will now give an eloquent speech about how we're wrong.
Well, I'd say it's good suggestions. You know, I'm always looking for feedback on everything so we can develop things further.
Oh, come on. You clearly have never listened if you're not telling us we're wrong. All right, Lang,
well,
you're wrong
on
because...
on the terrain portion of it, I think it's just... Firestorm's won in the movement phase, so it's, you know, the terrain, I think, people can adapt to it.
Well, because
I know I put,
we put
pictures like crazy up on the forums. I know.
Yeah. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, like, we're not saying you sprung this on people, and the people who are saying you sprung it on them, whatever.
Right. No, and again, I love the terrain. Honestly, I would be disappointed if next year you, like, have the terrain. Like, I'm totally fine with it.
Well,
but I think it's just an issue of people need to know what they're getting into, and that way they can build their fleets accordingly. Because, well, again, there were no Aquan players, and if I would, like, I thought about bringing Aquans before. I was like, nah, Terrans are my baby. They're totally my first love. But
well, Nathan changes his mind on what fleets he will bring to what event roughly every 4 days, 4 to 5 days.
It is true. It is absolutely true. But it's just like an Aquan wing-heavy fleet would have fucking owned on those boards.
Yeah.
Dropping mines everywhere.
Well, again, that's why the Ryushi were the dark horse, right? They were perfect for the meta, kind of, and the scenarios that had been built for it. But all it really comes down to is variety, right? Like, there's a reason why every game of Warhammer 40K is in pitched battle, right? And in Firestorm Armada, like you say, it's one in the movement phase, but at the same time, even if we're deploying in a slightly different section of the board, it doesn't change the game like it would change 40K. There has to be variety between the missions. By the time we'd played all four, I felt like all four were basically all, like, I could have played all four scenarios on the same table, right? Like, that's how it felt by the time it was done.
John did play 3 of his 4 games on the same table.
Right, exactly. You know, and there's no difference there. There's nothing, there's not enough variety between the missions. I think the scenarios themselves were generally pretty fun. I thought that they did a good job of either forcing people to the center of the table or forcing people to look at deployment slightly differently. But I would have loved to see an escalating engagement. We didn't see it.
That's one of the, in our meta, we hate the escalating engagement.
Well, of course you do, because you guys take min squads and nothing but tier 1.
Yeah.
Well, of course we're not going to play the mission that our people will be bad at.
Absolutely true. No, but I mean, escalating engagement sucks. Escalating engagement always feels like you're eating a shit sandwich, and that's why it's so good. Is escalating engagement punishes everyone equally.
Right,
so,
but everybody's eating the same shit sandwich.
And that's exactly it. Because, like I said, I totally get it. When we draw up escalating engagement, I breathe a heavy sigh of disappointment, and I suck it up and I play it. Because, again, it is one of those missions that it forces you to do something different. Like, for me, I had my one fleet that I knew every single game, bar none, my battleship's going to enter my fold space, you know, shunt enter, because it allows me to put it behind my opponent, and I'm just going to fucking maul them. And it worked 100% of the time. Escalating engagement forces my battleship into a flank reserve. So suddenly, this go-to strategy of mine has to change. I don't get tack cards because my admiral's not on the board. So like I said, it is one of those missions that everyone hates it, but everyone eats that same shit sandwich, and that's what balances it out. But as Lang said, you know, with your guys, because I think I played 2 of your guys, if not 3, over the tournament. And 2 of them did the regroup card turn 1, where they're just like, fuck tier 3, I don't need it. Regroup. Did we lose Josh?
No.
Oh, sorry, it just got all quiet. That's why I was like, oh my God.
No, we're just completely enamored by the sultry tones of your voice.
You know, it happens, baby. This is why I podcast. It's for the ladies. All 1 of them that listen.
For the
But no, like, that's the thing. So it's just like, you know, I totally get that escalating engagement sucks. I would have loved to have seen it. Just like Mission 6, what is it, Ambush?
Ambush.
I think Ambush...
Or Surprise Attack, or whatever.
Yeah, Surprise Attack, whatever the fuck it is. I think it would have also been a really good way to add some variety, instead of it just being like, standard deployment, go fly up to this thing, and then hang around.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think we did one of Josh. The other... No, he's right here. Josh, you here? Your mic's unplugged. He might have muted himself. He's still on the call.
I do see that Skype hasn't dropped him.
No, he's still on the call. I think he just had to mute his mic for some reason.
Yeah, I had to mute the mic. My apologies.
No, all good. It's just that constant reassuring buzzing was going, and then it cut out suddenly. I was just like, oh my god, where am I? Who am I?
White noise.
All right,
it's like
man.
When you work in a cubicle.
Right, exactly. Oh, in my building we have white noise generators as well. But no, you know, I think, like I said, we really did enjoy ourselves. We're going to nitpick things because it's the people that we are, and I mean,
oh yeah,
we're never going to get help for it. But really, I think the big thing to take away in general was that it was a very positive experience for us, even for our meta, right? Because we got a good picture of kind of a different way that people play, different way that people build lists, which is the exact opposite of the way that we build, right? Because of the fact that we tend to play with larger terrain pieces, you know, on the same size board that maybe are a little bit more ominous on the board, block a lot more vision, as opposed to a lot smaller, spread out more stuff where, like, every table is the Eye of Terror. Or, yeah, you know, yeah. I felt like it was Wrath of Khan, right?
Yeah. Well, and that was one of the big things, like, I know George and I were both looking forward to, is seeing how everybody else played. Mm-hmm. Like, this was the first kind of major meeting of, like, metas from real different regions of, you know, North America, and we're like, well, how's this going to play out? We're like, I don't know, we're just going to have to see, because it's like, it's sounding like everybody plays completely different, and it was interesting to see how everybody played, and like the different feedback comments we've been getting from, you know, guys from different areas. Like, we had some, what was it, like, William and his son, both were from, like, the East Coast. They play out by the old GW, North American HQ, mm-hmm. at Glen Burnie. And just, like, some of those questions, the way they're doing stuff is, like, different. Then they're like, oh, we're kind of doing this wrong. Or then we, you know, we're like, oh, we're doing this completely different, too. It's just, like, first major meeting of the metas, and it was a very much a learning experience. But
yeah,
we're still absorbing it.
Yeah, and again, I think it was great. I personally have no issues, but I'm also the kind of guy that tends to wing it a lot of times when I play minis games.
Well, you also went 3-1, right? Like, your win ratio really depends a lot on your kind of end result.
Oh, well, I was going to say, right? No, but again, I did go 3-1 only because I was playing primary and secondary objectives. If you look at the battle log, I had... a minor win by a point, a draw, a fucking crushing defeat, good old Tarakians, and then a landslide victory as well. So it's just like, you know, it was my typical Terran bullshit of like 1-1-2, baby. Like, it's just like, that's Terrans. Like, Terrans don't pull shit out on the battle log. I was only winning by playing scenarios, which I think is interesting. Honestly, I would just fine-tune scenarios a little bit, maybe release playtestings to other metas. And I'm not fishing for you to just be like, send us your missions. But it's just like, you know, play them around a lot. Because I don't think you saw any issues with your mission 4, despite the fact that, like I said, Lang couldn't win without tabling his opponent.
Well, if he had killed one more Corvette, it was impossible to win. And I had 12 on the table... And then both of my battleships had 2 as escorts, right? So, like, there was no way out. If he had just focused my Corvettes, he would have gotten the primary. But he couldn't do that because it was long deployment in Wrath of Khan. One of the other things I want to talk about before we kind of get to the end here is the points level, right? Are you still an advocate for 900 points?
I am still an advocate for 900, but we're actually thinking... We're talking about changing the points level for it.
Just higher or lower?
We might go higher.
Oof.
So, but like I said, we're in the early stages, and we're gonna do some playing and testing.
So why do you hate 800 then?
I think it's a valid question, because I mean,
I think it's valid.
I mean, I get it.
For the longest time, we played nothing but Patrol Fleet side stuff until we really started expanding, and we kind of got, like, Battle Fleet, all we play is, like, midfield Battle Fleet games.
Oh, yeah. Typically, all we play here is 1,200 points. Like, we don't play anything between. It's either 800, 1,200, or 2,000. That's it. That's all we play. We don't play anything else in between, because in our experience, that's where the game is the most balanced. 900 points, I mean, look at some of the fleets that were brought in, right? Where it was three tier one and maybe two more ships between tier two and tier three, in the sense of, like, you had three tier one and five tier two, tier three.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these were completely gaming the system because of the fact that you would put it into that battle fleet range, but there was no additional balance added to it. There was nothing else, like, kind of, taken into account for the fact that, like, yeah, some people are going to show up with two dreadnoughts, or they're going to show up with a dreadnought and two battleships.
Yeah. And we ran into that even, like, when we were playtesting, you know, playing the points level stuff. Like, when I play, I don't generally go tier one heavy when I do 900 points. Like, I always go, like, tier two. Like, I cram it in, like, heavy cruisers and stuff. Like, mostly because my Relf heavy cruisers are freaking bomb ass.
Right, so, but, yeah, I mean, the majority of a lot of the fleets that were winning, though, had a lot of their points in tier one, like the majority of their points in tier one.
Yeah, they were top heavy.
Oh, but that was the best way to play, right?
Yep.
Nathan, you had typically two tier one. I had two tier one.
Yeah, I was going to say.
A lot of the guys had two tier one, like, just all across the board.
Every one of my, like, both of my fleet lists ran two tier ones. Both of them had a battleship in there. And, you know, yeah, like, both of my fleets, I think, list one, the one that I played for games one and three, had the least amount of points in tier one at 500.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the least. So, like I said, it is one of those things where it's just like, yeah, I mean, for me, I think at 900, and it's what we said before when we were talking about it before the event, you're going to take a lot more of the tier one, because you can take two battleships, which you can't at 800. You can take a dreadnought, which you can't at 800.
Salt carriers as well.
Yeah, you know, assault carriers.
Or not salt carrier, battle carrier.
Battle carriers. Things like that. So it's just like, you know, or squadrons of two battle cruisers. Like, my marshals were fucking MVPs almost every game I played. The exception being, like, the first three turns of my game against Tarakians, they were kicking ass, taking names. The last three turns, they're like, eh, we're busy.
Yeah.
But that was a dice thing more than it was anything else. But it's just like, you know, one battle cruiser versus a squadron of two, it changes things up. So, I mean, for me, yeah, I mean, maybe it's our meta, but I'm just like, I think you either got to play 800 points at four games, you got to play 1,200 points at three games, and just be happy with the balance that you're going to get. Because, I mean, when people were taking their three tier ones at 900 points, if you add 300 points onto that, they actually have to fill out the rest of their fleet. They're not cramming in more tier ones, but their opponents are be able to take things that can more easily combat those tier ones.
So, Josh, if there's anything I would say, because, again, what you were saying before is that you guys started playing patrol fleets, which is what people typically start playing, right? But I think with the addition of stuff like battle stations, battle cruisers, with the addition now of defense platforms and things of that nature, you should probably take some time to revisit patrol fleets, because there's a lot more variety there now.
Well, and I was actually going to say that, actually, now that you're bringing it up. But
right, and that's really the big thing. When we first started, we all played with a core box.
Yep.
And, like, one other group of cruisers, and we were like, yay, patrol fleet, right? We all started there. Everybody did. So we get it. It's boring. We played it till we all died. But now, like, you know, I've got 3,000 points of fucking directorate, if not more. I have the most fun playing patrol fleets. There's so much variety you can put into patrol fleets. And now, because we have all of the allies out there, we've got marauders out there, we've got all these things that we can mix and match with. Like, there's a huge amount of variety.
Yeah, and when we were, first starting development stuff, like, we actually, well, was it starting when Marauders come out? August, I think it was. When that dropped, we had all of a sudden, like, a rapid succession of a lot of new stuff coming out. So we were kind of locked in because we had started doing advertising and everything else. so we haven't had a chance to, like, I guess, revisit going with the lower point levels. Because, yeah, there's a lot more variety at the lower point levels now with the defense platforms, battle stations, battle cruisers, everything else. And we're definitely looking at the points totals. Because, honestly, it may be, like, I'm of the mindset, you know, of doing it, you know, maybe advantageous going maybe lower just in for purposes of time. Because, I mean, we did run over.
That's another big thing.
Yeah, and it's my inner German. I've got to have a schedule and try to stick to the schedule and have a plan for a plan. So.
Yeah, I mean, we played an 800 tournament here in Edmonton, about 12 players in that one. And, I mean, it went really smoothly. Like, we had very, very few games go to time. And that was primarily because of the fact that, you know, you don't have to worry about so much Tier 1 kind of clogging up the table and refusing to die, right?
Yeah.
Like, so many fleets have things that allow them to just stay in the fight, right? Where if you're playing Ralthosa or you're playing, Dindrenzi or something like that, if I put a Dreadnought on the table and you don't have enough firepower to deal with it, it just doesn't go away, right? You have to roll super hot to get rid of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The only reason why Matt killed my Dreadnought was because he crit it 4 times in a row and 2 of them were shield disables.
Oof.
Right. And it was one of those things where it was like, nah, this is meant to be, right? Like, I'm not getting out of this, right? And, like, you know, like, outside of just mega, mega hot dice, nobody came even remotely close to, I think the closest somebody got was, like, they got it to half, and I just bugged out, and it was gone.
Well, yeah, the most damage my Dreadnought took was 3 hull points.
Keep in mind, I also killed 2 Dreadnoughts total in of the 4 games that I played. But that the only reason why I did that was because I had a Dreadnought and a battleship.
You know, oddly enough, I didn't actually run into a Dreadnought in my game. So I guess for me, I only have one burning question for you, Josh, and that is, you going to run Planetfall as well next year? Because you totally should.
That's the plan, actually.
Fuck yes, giant robo-scorpion, because I can't fucking wait for that model.
I know. Yeah, I did say my ground army's a Ralthosa too, so I'm
nice.
My big style. Listen, scorpion.
I am doing Ralthosa in space because I was just like, fucking swarms of spiders had me at hello.
Well, it's like we said, Ralthosa are doing Tyranids better than Tyranids right now. And
yes.
that's why they're so attractive. Like, all these other boxes are like, right, here's your 3-4 infantry, and then you have Ralthosa, here's 20 infantry bases, and you're like, holy, are you shitting me? Like, no.
Yeah, like, the Core Helix where it's just like, we give you 16. And you can buy 2, and you can just run 32, because who doesn't want swarms of fucking spiders?
I am really looking forward to the frickin' Ralthosa Assault Helix when they look right out, because I just want to see tons and tons and tons of drones.
Mm-hmm. Right? No, it's gonna be super awesome. I know that Terry and I are already planning Adepticon for next year. It's definitely gonna happen for us, so, thank you guys for running the tournament. Because again, I had a blast. Haters gonna hate, especially if haters think they're gonna win the tournament and then show up and get rolled. But, you know, for me, it's just like, you know what? Leave the scenery. People now know. Like, I wouldn't change anything.
No, really? You should absolutely just keep it for like 2 of the scenarios, and then in the other 2 scenarios, do something different. Just give us some variety. That's the third time I've said it. It's the last time I'll say it.
Variety.
Give us some variety so that even if we're playing a fleet that's not in the meta.
A different guy every day of the week.
Well,
you know,
fucks or blows is it depends on what day it is. If I had a late night, but like again, if you're thinking of like, okay, who am I fucking by doing this? Or who's this table, like, just make it useless to play? And if you look at the table and you're like, well, you can't play Dindrenzi now, or you can't play Terran now, or something like that, right?
The one thing that I was most grateful of, because, like, for me, I know how my Terrans perform in tournaments, and that is my games are always called for time. I'm almost always in a better position than my opponent in the battle logs to draw. You know, because Terrans are such a long game fleet. So even when I was considering it, I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll take my Dindrenzi, because at least they're going to rack up battle log points early. And, you know, that might help me win better or place better in the tournament. Yeah, when I walked in that morning, I was like, man, I'm so excited for this. Thank fucking God I left my Dendrenzi at home. Like, I have never been more grateful for a decision to be lazy and not paint in my life.
Yeah, I mean, the only loss for my Omnidyne was handed to me by Austin there. But all it did was make me go, man, I miss my Directorate, because I've been playing all my other fleets lately, so it's time to get back to my Directorate.
Yeah, well, I know Directorate's like the bane of his existence, because that's Dave actually won. He's actually a Directorate player most of the time. Like, Works Raptor is a secondary fleet, and that's the only thing he had kind of prepped. Because the way he runs Directorate, he's been just at the store running old Babylon 5 Earth Force models representing Directorate stuff. So
fucking proxy.
So he's just like, I'm gonna have to paint an entire Directorate fleet if I want to actually run Directorate at the tournament. I'm like, yep, you are.
So, yeah, you're damn right. You're gonna have to.
So. So that's why, like, he went with the Works Raptor option, which obviously worked for him. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to next year. I really am.
So one of the other things that I actually didn't get a request or didn't get a chance to talk about was some of the comments that have been made with regards to, like, the fact that there were so few core fleets in the, well, top five, top ten, or even just in the event in general.
Yeah.
We had a lot of people who were playing core fleets, but generally they were in the minority. What we saw was a big mix of Marauders, Xenian, and Kurok. Like, those were the primary fleets that people were taking.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your view on that? Like, my view on it is just they're super cool, and because this game is so much about the aesthetics, and every fleet can be competitive, there's no, like, bottom of the barrel fucked up, you know, garbage ass fleets in the game. They can all be pretty competitive. Like, I would have ranked Ryushi at the bottom, but obviously, like, John just fucking rolled kids with it. But
yeah.
I think that's really the only reason why we saw it. I don't think it has anything to do with the core fleets. I just think a lot of people look at it, and gamers being, you know, viewing themselves as the snowflakes that they are, you know, always have to do something different, right? Like, if you go, hey, we're playing Street Fighter, nobody plays Dalsim, they'll be like, I'm going to play Dalsim. I'm going to get good with them. Like, that's their gut reaction.
Yeah, and I was shocked that we had no Aquians. Like, there wasn't a single Aquian player out of all 26. Like, even the guys that dropped, or maybe the one guy that just didn't show up outright, maybe he was our lone Aquian player. But, I know we play a lot of Alliance. Like, my first fleet was RSN. So, you know, I've always been Alliance. I didn't, until I actually picked up some Dendrenzi, and then I just recently got some Directorate, and, you know, Ralthosa. Like, I had so much problems playing the RSN, and then all of a sudden, everybody's like, oh, you know, you're like Conan the Barbarian. When you play any game, you're just going to charge for it. You can't play Ralthosa. They're too cagey. And then I annihilated George's Pathogen twice, and he's like, what the hell just happened? And I'm like, apparently I can play Ralthosa.
Oh, I think Ralthosa are one of the strongest fleets out there. They're one of those.
Yeah.
They're the most unforgiving fleet out there.
Yeah, very. Yeah, there's no real margin for error. With
Once you start to fall off, you fall off hard. And
yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got literally no special weapons, anything. Everything's primary. Everything's 8-inch range bands. You have no cloak, so once you drop, or no shield, so once you drop your cloak, it's just like, now you're just eating straight dice, and you don't have any special rules like rerolling ones, being able to boost,
yeah,
like,
nothing's
move.
Reinforced.
Yeah, nothing's reinforced. There's no kinetic, being able to just be like, oh, take a hazard marker and lose a crew. You know what? I think your shields should be off instead. Like, there's nothing special about all of that with Ralthosa, but at the same time, kind of everything special about them, because no one else has a fully cloaked fleet. No one else can stack AP as reliably as they can. I mean, we all know Pathogen can,
no,
but
Directorate can.
Oh, yeah, the Directorate.
Directorate stack AP better than anybody. Oh, they absolutely do.
But in every, on every single thing, that's again, that's why I'm just like, ah, Ralph Ozar. Again, director to our boarding fleet, Ralph Ozar, our boarding fleet.
Well, yeah, the difference,
six
difference
or one, being half a dozen
that,
in the oven.
Difference being that Directorate can have access to Special Forces. That's
and,
what,
and that is
they're
the
virtually
difference.
On the same level in terms of the amount that they can put out, but mm-hmm. because Directorate have access to Special Forces, that's why they take the gig.
Well, that, and they have the ability to, like, shut down point defense, shut down this, shut down that, and then, like, biohazard ammunition like crazy, you know.
You can biohazard on Ralph Ozar.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you can. I know I usually run corrosive personally, but biohazard, yeah, you can really crank. If you any ability to crank down the crew on the ship, you know.
But yeah, I mean, anyway, I mean, discussions aside, like I said, thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to Planetfall and Firestorm next year. I think my goal will be to play the same race for both games because it'd just be fucking bonkers fun.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to be Space Spiders.
Yeah, and it's we're kind of starting to really get into hardcore playing Planetfall now because everybody's kind of like spaceshipped out after this week past weekend. So it's like okay guys, let's play Planetfall now. We can finally get our ground wars in and see if we can come up with exactly what point totals are going to work for.
Well, see, honestly, I think Planetfall is a better tournament game because
it's way more forgiving.
I mean, it's a faster game, but you could even just say, hey, everybody, build 4,500-point lists, 0 hours start at 30, and, that way it's just like, your games are going to go fucking fast because you can just start the 0 hour lower than your points value.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is why it's just like, it's better. Because, I mean, like, it would be like in Firestorm, having both players start their battle log at negative 10 when you're playing a battle fleet, where it's just like, oh, listen, you lose 5 points, you bottom out.
Yeah. I like the 0 hour. The 0 hour is going to make this tournament play so much easier.
Well, yeah, but hey, there's another reason to go to 800 points instead of 900. Battle log bottoms out at 10 instead of 15.
True.
Yeah, because again, like, even, like, Lang and I always build fleets, especially when you're building battle fleets, where it's just like, if I get tabled, I will not bottom out.
That's right. I mean, everybody does. Like, I think anybody who knows the game.
At no point are you ever afraid that something like that's going to happen.
But it should be at the back of your mind. Like, that should be something that you have to take into account and say, what happens if I take two tier one in an 800 point fleet?
Like, yeah, I'll, if I have a battle cruiser with frigate escorts and I have a battleship, I lose them both. That's fucking minus 8 points. Like, holy shit.
Yeah. And that's battle log manipulations. Like, to me is one of the key parts of fleet building,
to
manipulate the battle log completely by just your list. You know, you start with your list and you just go from there in terms of, making sure you don't bottom out and, you know, maximize the amount of points that you give up in a worst case scenario.
Well, it's just everybody bugs the hell out, right?
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, I'll echo Nathan's sentiments here. Thank you so much for running the event. It was a ton of fun. We all enjoyed ourselves. We definitely, we were looking forward to this for a long time and it didn't disappoint. Getting a chance to play everybody was fantastic. So that brings us to the weekly listener poll question for this week. I don't think we've asked this one in the past. We may not have, but it's simple. Do you prefer rulebook scenarios or custom scenarios? If we've asked it in the past, we're asking it again because we don't remember that long. We've been drinking alcohol straight for like 4 years. So that's the one. You can find that at jadagamercast.com. But yeah, man, that's pretty much where that one lands. Thank you for being on the show, Josh.
Thank you for having me on, guys. It was great meeting you at the tournament.
Fantastic. So that's been Jada Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.